Welcome back to Classical Guitar Insider. This is your host, Brett Williams. And today on the show, we have Anna Vidovic. Pretty big name. She's great. Outstandingly nice. Really great to get to meet her and to finally get someone who all you know. No offense, but what has it been? I've been doing these a lot less, and I know that, you know, you've been patient with me as far as getting the big names on, right? Look, you know, you got to understand, I'm not doing this for much money. There's like virtually nothing in this for me at this point. I turned 45 last Saturday. Okay, so this is it. This is what I'm doing. If this is shameless self-promotion, I'm sorry, but I don't think it is at this point. I think this is a labor of love, right? I'll tell you, everything's going well. I think I'm settling into what I am, which is this. I'm going to just be this guy for the rest of my life, right? I'm going to teach kids. I just had a conversation with a parent. It was great. I'm really good at that. You know, I love it. I'm passionate. If you listen to the old episodes where I'm sitting there complaining about teaching, like, you know, the episodes from 10 years ago, it's pretty outstanding. I must be a completely different person. I haven't listened to those. I never listened to them. You know, I edit it and then I kind of like let it go out into the world. Maybe I'll, you know, start listening to it when, you know, when I'm at the gym or something and I just want to make sure everything went well, and then I'll just keep it on. Does that make any sense? Anyway. I'm just doing good, though. I had, like I said, my 45th birthday. I got to interview Anna Vidovic, which was great. And then now I'm in a new apartment, too, if you can hear. There's a little bit of echoing on the walls, but I've got some sort of a damper on this. One of the things I noticed in the... Did you guys know what that's called? What's it called when you have P's and B's? And it sounds like you're spitting into someone's ear. I apologize for that. I tried to do a little bit of editing with this, but in this episode, every time I speak, I can really hear it. It sounds not so good. So I ordered a pop filter. That'll come when it comes. In the meantime, I'm just covering the microphone with a sock so that you don't have to listen to me spitting into your ear anymore. The show is sponsored by SavageClassical.com. That's SAVAGE Classical.com. Richard is the guy over there. Make sure you tell him that Big Diaper Brett sent you. I haven't used Big Diaper Brett as my, what is it, modicum? As my name for a long time. And I figured, what better time to call myself Big Diaper Brett than when I'm about to introduce and interview one of the most sophisticated class acts out there. You know, someone who takes our instrument and presents it to the world in as elegant a way as possible. Brought to you by Big Diaper Brett. tell Richard that I sent you. He's the guy. And also you can go to rosettapodcast.com/insider. You can get, for $9, you can learn any language you want. For $200, you can learn any language you want, plus any other language you want, plus any other language you want for the rest of your life at rosettapodcast.com/insider. Yeah, that's it. I'm Boyd Meets Girl guitar duo, guitar cello duo is coming out with an album pretty soon. I figured I'd say something because Rupert reached out. He wants to sponsor the show, but it's going to be out in March. I figured I'd just put it on the radar since this is a big interview, you know, and he wants to help out. He's sponsoring the show. You can do that too. Go to BrettWilliamsMusic.com, BrettWilliamsMusic.com, and you can help. You can just give me money, or you can give me money and I'll talk about your project. Well, Rupert's going to, you know, help out with the show, and I'll talk more about his project later on, but I thought I'd just put the word out since we have such a big guest and he's an old friend. Boyd Meets Girl is a guitar cello duo that is very, very good. And I like that guy. I've known these people for 20 years now. It's outstanding. 45 I turned. Now, I know if you're 55, you're like that, you're just a kid, but this is officially things are starting to hurt. I'm a pretty healthy guy. I do drink, you know, quite often, but I other than that, I'm you know, I work out every day and I eat healthy. I don't know. I had a sandwich and a bag of chips. I feel like trash right now, but you know, maybe black coffee will counteract that. Anyway, new place right around the corner from my old place. I moved during the New York blizzard, which was 2 weeks ago. That was fun. I have a 83-year-old landlord who lives directly below me. That's not very fun. She is she has a lot of opinions about the way that things should be done. And we found out that there are no bikes allowed in the building. It's also a no pet building, but she has a cat and the neighbors have cats. They just mean no dogs, which is fine. But my brother has a dog who I love very much. And now I'm stuck. I don't know if she can. She probably can't hear me, right? I mean, let's be honest. She's 83. You know, if she gets me too much trouble, I guess I could just go scare her. No, I'm just kidding. So anyway, other than that, it's a beautiful apartment. Me and Liz, together in bliss, in a big, beautiful apartment. I never really talked to you guys about old Liz. Liz is a great girlfriend. Liz is the best girlfriend of all time. She is this wonderful person who I started dating about a year and a half ago. And, I don't even talk about these things anymore. I think I didn't want to talk about people I was dating because they just were going on dates. And I didn't want to, like, you know, shit all over them and then have this, you know, I don't know. And then have them listen and go, like, why are you talking about me, you jerk? We just went on three dates and I just, you know, wasn't interested in you. Because you're a podcaster. Anyway, well, Liz was, and we ended up. actually, I'm not going to get into it. You know, I'll ask her if I can talk about it, but it's a funny story, our origin story. But we went out with each other in the beginning. Then 2 years later, we went out with each other again, and we hit it off. We've been together for a little over a year and a half, and. This opportunity, you know, we decided that we were going to look for places in January and we found it. And we actually, coincidentally, and this is actually a big prerequisite for people I date, they have to live within a 5-block radius, apparently. Liz lived 2 blocks away from me. So between her house and my house, there's a street called Jewel, and we live on that street now together. It's incredible. I have a living room again. I'm in an office, okay? An office where I can play guitar and no one will bother me. We've both been working from home, which I thought we would kill each other. Turns out we're fine. We're doing quite well. Except for that sandwich. I got to stop ordering. You know, there's this place called Brooklyn Standard. It's a sandwich place. It's been around forever. Awkwafina actually used to work there, if you know who that is. I just, you know, when something's convenient and it's just like, you're just like, I'll just keep eating this, even though I don't like it. Their sandwiches are so messy and their bread is just so not good. And there's a good bakery right around the corner I should be going to. I don't know why I put myself through this. I do it. I eat an entire bag of jalapeno potato chips and then I sit there and just feel vomitous for the first 3 lessons of the day. Which I actually have to go to. I have a 2:40 lesson. It's now 2:33 on Friday, February 11th. Just so you know, my birthday was February 5th. 45, it's a big one. One of my friends got me an Oculus. I don't know what to do. I have to I look ridiculous in it. I mean, we've all seen the videos of the people. There's like, it's a virtual reality thing. And my best buddy, Mike, got it for me so that we could play tennis together because he lives in Los Angeles now. I've got that. Most of the furniture is not IKEA, but we did go with IKEA for some of the office stuff. It's looking good in here. I'm looking forward to having some interviews in here. It's going to be a little tight, but, you know, that's the way it goes. Pretty, lots of light, very happy. I'm back. Back in a relationship, back in a house. Anyway, let's get on with the show. There was just a lot to talk about today, coincidentally, right? There's a lot to talk about. I'm going to try and pump these out more. I just needed to move. I did the Anna Vidovic interview, and then I sat on it for a while I moved. during a snowstorm, which wasn't good. A lot of mud. Here's my time with superstar guitarist, an outstanding human being, Anna Vidovic. I remember vividly the moment when I first heard you play. It was your Naxos 2000 release. And it was with my friend Matt. We were both students, guitar students. And I went downstairs. He goes, "You got to hear this person. Is I don't know when you made that recording, but the mythos at that point was that there was this 13-year-old that was making this music that, and we were like, why are we even trying? Because it was such an outstanding recording, and I thought, oh, it's going to be like a child prodigy or something like that, who, you know, it's gonna just kind of go through the motions, and there's not going to be any musicality there. But we're listening, and we're like, no, everything's there. She's got it all. She's actually at such a young age. You were so musical.
Thank you so much. It's very nice of you to mention that. That was the first recording that we did with Norbert Kraft in Canada. Yeah. So I was very excited and very nervous, and I have played that piece for quite a while because I've learned it in Croatia. You know, learning in Croatia, we always played a lot of Bach's music, and my teacher was very insistent that, you know, that I should play a lot of Bach's music, because you can learn a lot musically, you know, by playing his music. So it kind of stuck with me until today. I mean, this is what, you know, he's one of my favorite composers, probably the most favorite. So but that, you know, my teacher in Croatia, Istvan was his name, was an amazing musician, amazing guitarist, amazing teacher, you know. So I've learned almost everything, you know, from him, because I worked with him since I was like 7 or 8, and then all the way up to when I was 18. So, you know, a good 10 years of his guidance that, you know, basically led me from the beginnings to the, you know, teenage years. So, and we have worked on that prelude for a long time, and, you know, his ideas really shaped me as a musician, you know. So I owe a lot to that upbringing, you know, because if I didn't have that, I probably would have gone into a different direction. So, you know, to this day, today, I still remember things that he told me, you know. I'm still learning from that. Yeah. So it was just his guidance that was that kind of shaped me, you know. And of course, when you grow up, you have to develop your own style of playing. But at that time, I think I was going through a certain transition and, you know, kind of finding myself. And I think I was like 17 or, and, you know, so I think that's the recording you're talking about, the prelude, right, from the box.
Yeah, I think so. I think you probably, that was a long time ago when I had heard that. But if you were probably 17 back then, but I think you were probably winning competitions. There was something about a 13-year-old who was amazing. I heard that recording and I was like, this is insane, like, you know, but.
It was, I mean, you know, when I listen to it today, it's, of course, I find a lot of, it's just too fast and a little too, but I was young, you know, so when we're at a certain age, when we're young, we tend to play a little faster than we should, you know, so, you know, that not necessarily what I would do today, you know. I think as you grow up, as you age and mature, you tend to slow down a little bit. So, you know, of course I would play it differently today, but it was just the one moment in time, you know, when I was, you know, just kind of finding myself, you know, trying to find things that would, you know, make me, I don't know, you know, make my own stamp, you know, my own sound. And yeah. So, but, you know, that's a really beautiful prelude. And you know, there's so much there musically that you can discover, you know. So
that's an age too. 17 is an age where it is. I remember that age, and I remember feeling like I got to start making some decisions. So and you kind of mentioned that. You mentioned that was sort of a turning point. You'd been with this teacher for a while. You were obviously very good. You had this, you had this one path that you could go on. And what were the other sort of things that were going on back then that you were drawn to? What were the other sort of paths that you were looking at?
Well, I was just finishing in Croatia, finishing my degree with Istvan, and then I was looking for I was looking for something else and maybe a little change, you know, and guidance. And of course, Istvan and I, you know, keep in touch, and we're always, you know, he's always going to be my major first teacher. So, but I was just looking for something else. You know, I wanted to come to the States, and so I wanted to study here a little bit more. So those years were difficult because I, you know, I was trying to find a place to go, a place to study, and so I, you know, I've come into contact with Peabody Conservatory. So, and that was another part of you know, my life when I started in Baltimore with Barueco, that was, you know, of course he's an amazing teacher as well, but at that time I was looking to learn more about how to develop my musicality, you know, because I've worked a lot on my technique and so for many years, and I was feeling like you know, I didn't want the focus to be only on technique. I wanted to develop the you know, the sound, the dynamics. I was searching for something, you know. So, because like I said, it was those were transitional years, you know. I wanted to, you know, develop as much as I can, because I was feeling like I was just relying on technique. You know, I wasn't so much developing musically, but again, that comes with age. You know, you just you have to search for things, and you have to mature. You know, of course, it comes with a life experience as well. But I think that was my major goal, to just develop my musicality. You know, and it wasn't easy because I was kind of struggling. You know, because guitar is a difficult instrument. You know, we have to work on many, many things. The sound is a big part of it, you know, to develop your own unique sound. So, those years were, I think I was working on that mostly, you know, dynamic sound and just expression, you know. So.
Yeah, well, you were taking time out, too. I mean, you've probably been on a pretty steady trajectory as far as the competition winning and, you know, graduating so early. You know, we don't graduate that early over here, I don't think, you know. So it was pretty. I mean, you must have. Yeah, I think it's very important for an artist to take some time out, and whether it be a year or 4 years, even, and just really get themselves to the next level. And you were saying that one of the things you were working on was dynamics, all those things. Those things, obviously, you know, I teach a lot of kids, and you know, you talk about it, and it that kind of stuff can go in one ear and out the other. So they have to get to an age of maturity where they actually take that stuff seriously. Because to a kid, they're just like, oh, this is homework. I'm going to do it, finish it, done, next. And, you know, exactly. So you did that with Manuel Barueco.
Yeah, you know, and I think we all, you know, as students, I think we have gone through, I mean, I've gone through personally through the stages where I didn't always listen, you know, and I just did it because my teacher told me to do it. So, and then later you remember. I mean, now I remember things that, you know, my Croatian teacher told me. Now I remember things that Barueco told me. Because at the moment, sometimes you don't understand maybe the message, you know, and then you remember it like many, many years. And now I'm like, oh, that's what he thought. You know, that's what he was claiming to. That's what he was trying to convey to me. Because maybe at the time I didn't understand it, you know. So learning always goes for many, many years, you know. We're always learning. So
very much. And I always bring that up too with my old teacher, Adam Holzman. For a while there, the first 10 years after college, every time I sat down at the guitar, it was like every day something he said came to me. And it seems like that's, you know, what happened with you, with both teachers.
Yeah, I think so. To this day, today is always, you know, and also when I teach, I learn through my students. Yeah. You know, I learn through them, and I watch how they do things. And you know, I mean, you're a teacher, so you know how we learn. It's like a constant, you know, back and forth. So I've learned a lot from, you know, my own students, and just by teaching and trying to explain something, you know, that, you know, it's that's how we learn too. Yeah. So, but yeah, you know, those were the years where I kind of took a year or two where I just stayed in Croatia, and, you know, just I was trying to find myself, you know, because, you know, as a young person, you just go through it. You do what they tell you to do. And then, you know, but you come to a point where you are a grown up. So you have to make some decisions, you know, by yourself. And part of it is also I just wanted to start from scratch. You know, wanted to go to the States and just start from all over, you know, from the beginning. Yeah. So it was interesting, you know.
Well, as far as like going, did you go back to Croatia after after Peabody? That's what you're saying, is that you went back there afterwards and took some time to figure out who you were?
Oh, no, no.
Or between?
No, just before. When I graduated in Zagreb, I took a year or two. I mean, I practiced, you know, but I just wasn't sure where to go. So, and then I came to the States, excuse me, when I was about 20, you know, so.
What drove you to the States? What, I mean, all the other places you could have gone, you know, there's so much to do in Europe. There's so many people to study with. You know, it seems, I would imagine, you know, your area of the world has a lot of guitarists in it. There's all these things to do. And then you come to, you know, Maryland. You wanted to experience.
Yeah, I was very attracted to you know, coming to the States. I've always admired it. And, you know, as a kid in Croatia, I think in Europe in general, we grew up watching, you know, American movies. And it's a dream. You know, it's a dream. That's how we learn English. And, you know, and then it's a dream to come to the States and to do something, either studying or whatever, you know. So I was very, very, I just kind of knew, you know, that that's where I wanted to go. And I don't know why. I was very drawn to it, you know. So, and then I looked for places, you know, for schools. And I sent several applications, you know, not just to Peabody, but to other schools as well. And then, you know, one day I got a call from Peabody and you know, that I got accepted to so I, you know, I said, okay, I'll go, you know. So it was a big move. You know, but I'm glad I did it. So
did you speak a lot of English back then, or was that a barrier as well?
I spoke a bit English because we learn in Croatia, we learn. And
you watch the movies too.
So. Watch the movies and you just kind of, but then to actually speak it, it's another thing, you know, it's hard to speak. So I had to, you know, also some slang words I didn't understand, you know, so the culture is different. So it took a while to get used to it, you know, so. But I'm still like learning some new words, you know, even after 20 years, you know, in the States, I'm still learning, you know, language. So
it seems like just from reading about you that your family is also, you have a classical guitarist who's an older brother, you have a pianist who's an older brother. So obviously there's a lot of music going on there. Did they also study in the capital with you or?
Yeah, my brothers, I have two older brothers. They're a bit older than me. So, you know, I was a very little girl when they started.
Oh, they're like significantly older. They're not like 3 years older. They're like 10 years older or something.
Well, they're 6 and 7 years older.
Okay.
So, yeah. So it's not much, but you know, when you're a kid, it's a lot. Like, you know, Victor, my brother, he was already 14, you know, when I kind of started. And I, you know, used to watch him, and he's an amazing guitarist, you know. So he was my first introduction to guitar, and probably the main reason why I started to play guitar. You know, I was just drawn to the way he played, and I just watched him like all the time. I mean, he would practice a lot, and you know, so it was good to have a role model, you know, somebody that you really admire, you know. And my other brother is a pianist, and my father used to play electric guitar, so we grew up with a lot of music, you know.
Oh, your dad was an electric guitar guy.
So yeah, he played electric guitar, yes, also bass guitar. So he wasn't a classically trained, you know, but he loved classical guitar. And then he kind of introduced us. You know, we had a lot of records, Segovia records, and, you know, he was collecting a lot of, you know, we were just, it was always music in our house.
You were also talking about Bach and what he means to you, him being sort of your favorite. What is it about him? I mean, obviously he's Bach. He's the best as far as just, you know, looking at music. And I think playing him is also very fun. You know, we all discover so much about ourselves and our playing, our limitations in some cases. And it's all kind of there. But what is it about him that continues to, not just you, but draws us all to him?
You're right. You're absolutely right. We always come back to Bach, you know. And I think as guitarists, I think we are drawn to his music. You know, I spoke to many guitarists that love to play, you know, Bach's music. So because it is difficult, because it is challenging, and we have to make it work. So I feel like we're learning through through his music. You know, I've learned so much about music in general through his, you know, I study it, and you know, sometimes putting the piece away and then pick it up again. I always feel like I'm learning like something new when I pick it up again.
Yeah.
And you know, and also I think analyzing it is good. There's a lot we can just see visually, you know, from his music. So, so I don't know. I've always been drawn. I mean, I just drawn to it. You know, I listen to it a lot. Like if I'm in a car, you know, I just listen to it. It puts me in a place of peace. You know, I'm like, I feel completely at peace and happy. It's a very, I feel like it's a very, optimistic music, you know, very, very positive, you know, and it's a mystery. I don't really know how to put it in words, you know, I think it's important for us as guitarists to play his music, you know, you know, learn about voicing and how to make everything smooth and even and all the voices, you know, it's tough. I mean, it's difficult to make it work, but it's, you know, that's a challenge. You know?
It's true. Just by playing him, and this is kind of what I was, you know, thinking about a minute ago, was just by playing him, you are sort of getting an education every time you play. You're getting a musical education and an education in art, and all these other things come together when you start putting those pieces together. As far as like sort of, you know, your repertoire is very much, you seem to sort of veer towards traditional repertoire, but are you doing anything with any sort of new music or any composers that maybe are less represented? Do you have any projects going on in that sphere?
You know, I'm always searching for, you know, something new that I would like to do, because yes, I am kind of, you know, attracted to the traditional repertoire more. Because actually, yeah, I mean, I don't know the reason why I'm so, you know, attracted. I just know that I'd like to play something that I enjoy, that I connect with, you know. So it's very difficult for me to play something modern because I just don't connect. You know, I feel like I would not be true to my audience, you know, to people that listen, and because I try to do both. Of course, I try to play something that I like to play, but I also like, I have to think about the audience and, you know, what they want to hear. And so you have to merge those two worlds. And so I'm still searching for something new. You know, I you know, sometimes I'm in touch with the composers, and you know, they send me music, and so I look through it, and I mean, there's a lot of beautiful music, new music, you know, but
I think so. I think a lot of the new stuff is kind of going more towards. I agree with you. I especially you know, at my age when I was in college, all the new music just categorically was at least mildly atonal. It was sort of like, you know, college music was sort of just really, really, I don't want to say out there, but yeah, not really palatable to not just a mainstream audience, but frankly to me, you know, I didn't like it. So I understand, but I think you're right. I think the new composers are sort of getting us back into that space of tonality, and they're starting to find new ways to express themselves.
I think so. I think it's coming back, you know, and then it's always changing, of course. You know, there is you just have to find something that you connect. You just know it. It's like an instrument, you know. When you find an instrument you like, you connect with it. You know, it's you're gonna do well, and so it's a very personal decision, you know. And I you know, people often ask me that question. You know, why do you play mostly traditional, and it's just, you know, it's just we connect with something that, you know, it's because it has to come out to the listener in an honest way. You know, if you play something you don't like, I mean, I think it's they will recognize that. So yeah, I mean, but if I find something that I love, I'd love to play more new music. I mean, why not? You know, it would be fun.
As far as your students are concerned, I was sort of not aware that you were teaching a lot, but how do you balance that with this concert career? I know like Sharon has been, you know, struggles with that sometimes as far as like just being able to be a teacher and at the same time having a full blown every year, you know, you got 100 concerts. It's like, what, how do you balance that? What do you tell your students to do? How does that work?
It is hard. I kind of in the past few years I kind of put it away a little bit because I felt I used to teach more actually, but you know, I felt like I wasn't giving enough to the students and because I wasn't there for them every week.
Yeah.
So, but most of my teaching is when I travel. You know, if I play at a university, I will teach a class, and then if I go to a festival, you know, excuse me, I'll stay maybe for a few days and then teach every day, you know, so it varies, but I actually don't have a, you know, a position somewhere where I teach consistently. I do have a few, you know, students that I see privately, but, but one day I would like to dedicate more time, you know, to teaching because I love teaching. I mean, it's just, you know, performing of course is great, but teaching is another way of expressing yourself, you know? And I love working with people and, you know, finding things to discover and to try to help them. And so I think, you know, I would like to dedicate more time actually to it, you know, so.
What's your sort of, as far as the performing is concerned, what do you try to bring to a performance? You know, like what sort of thing happens before a performance? What are the sort of things that you sort of consistently think of when you're planning out, when you're, you know, picking rep, what's sort of your approach? Do you have anything that you can say to that effect?
You know, it's a long process, you know, it's years and years of learning how to, you know, how to do both, how to perform, but also how to prepare well for, you know, because I think 80% of successful, actually more than that, 90% of successful performance is preparation.
Yeah.
You know, we have to dedicate a lot of time to preparation, you know, and then, you know, that 1 hour or 2 hours that you're on the stage, you have to forget about everything else. You have to just kind of let the music speak for itself. But to get to that point, we have to be prepared. You know, there's no other way, you know, because that there's only one chance, you know, we can't repeat it. It's the only one. The music has to keep going. And so I just, you know, my main goal is to always be, you know, 200% prepared, you know, so that I can relax, that I can, you know, let the music, you know, go into the audience and you know, connect with them that way. It's hard to do that, you know. It's sometimes I feel like, you know, it takes years and years to learn how to get there because it's hard to explain with words what happened at that moment when you're, you know, playing in front of people and when you feel like they're responding to you. And there's a moment in during the concert when, you know, it's completely peaceful. You feel like everybody's in the same, you know, thoughts. So I think, I'm, you know, preparation is extremely important. I dedicate a lot of time to that and, you know, it's every day. And of course, I have times when I take time off, but, it's also a lot of thinking, you know, a lot of, learning how to relax on stage and, you know, what to do, what not to do. A lot of it is psychological, you know, you have to learn how to relax and how to stay in the zone, you know, for a long amount of time, you know. So but that comes from experience, you know, and it doesn't happen quickly. It takes years, you know. So
yeah, there's no tips to that, I would imagine. It's just more or less just doing it. What do you do when you approach a new piece of music? What's the first thing?
I just, you know, different steps. I take it very, very slow. You know, actually what I like to do is like when I have a new music in front of me, I just like put the guitar away and then I look at it, I analyze it, you know, and I write things down. And, so it, I don't know, it helps me visually to see what's going on, you know, in the music. So I'll analyze it a little bit and then I, you know, I take the guitar and then I work on fingerings, you know, I try not to play it through, you know, when I'm just learning it, because I feel like I'm just going to like keep playing it and then not work on it, you know? Yeah. So I just work on the fingerings, you know, write everything down, the right hand, the left hand. And then when that's done, you know, then of course the dynamics and also a lot of, I love analyzing music, you know, I love like looking at it and, you know, and kind of play it in my mind. So So, and, you know, then I'll work on dynamics, you know, and put things in there. I try not to listen too much. I mean, sometimes I listen to other performances, but just to get the feel for the piece. But then you kind of have to put that away and just kind of work on it yourself. You know, you have to, you know, find a way to just to make it sound your own. So, and then, you know, the last step is, of course, memorization. That's the, that's the toughest part, the memorization, you know, to make it secure. And so that, that takes a lot of time.
What do you do for that? Like, what's, how do you let off the steam? 'Cause you've got a pretty, you got a pretty packed schedule. It's always stressful being on stage. It's stressful being in sort of like the public eye in that case, you know, knowing that you have to get up and be in front of hundreds of people, you know, next week or something like that. It must be sort of hard to, you know, just get out and relax a little bit because you've always got the pressure of a performance coming up.
I mean, it's, you know, it's I think at this point it's okay. I you know, I've kind of found a way to keep it, how can I say, keep myself grounded. You know, I live a very normal, I mean, I live a very simple life, and, you know, I love to do, like, I cook, you know, I like to go to the movies. I watch a lot of Netflix, of course. I love watching shows. I just finished one recently. It just relaxes me, you know. I make popcorn and then I just watch the show.
What was the show that you just finished? Which one?
We just watched Marseille with Gérard Depardieu. Have you seen it?
No.
Marseille on Netflix. It's really good. It has two seasons. It's really, I love it. It's good.
Well,
Gérard Depardieu, I love his, because I grew up watching his movies, you know, so when I saw that, I'm like, I have to watch that. It's good. It was good.
Yeah, I can't imagine really, what really he looks like right now.
Well, you know, he's very interesting. A very interesting person, and no, he looks good. I mean, you know, he's an amazing actor. I mean, he's just really, really, the way he captured his role, you know, his character was amazing. So yeah, so but now I'm already looking for another show to watch. So hopefully we'll find something.
He's great. He's an angry actor. You know, he's great. He's great with anger.
Yeah, a little bit. He has a little bit of anger in his character, in this character too. I mean, yeah. So, but he's a, you know, very complex character. So, but yeah. So, you know, like I said, cooking is a big part. I love to cook. So, and then I just, you know, I try to relax. I don't worry too much about, you know, when I go to a concert, I try to be as relaxed as possible, you know. And then when I finish, I go back to my life, you know, so it's very, I think you have to find the balance, you know, and not get things get to you, you know. It's just my, of course, my love. I love to play guitar. It's my job, but, you know, there's also another side of my life. And so a balance is good, you know, so.
Well, it's been wonderful talking to you. I really appreciate, you know, you taking the time to speak to us and to, you know. But is there anything going on right now that you'd like us to know about? Is there anything coming up? I know that the concerts have all been sort of put to the side for now, and maybe we're going to start picking it up in the spring. But what's the latest as far as concerts and recordings are concerned?
Some of them are scheduled for spring. We'll see how it goes. I mean, I'm going to start getting ready soon because you know, you don't know today, you know, the concert could be scheduled and then canceled in 2 weeks. So we have to be prepared. It's almost like you're standing and just like, you know, like waiting for anything to happen, you know. It's kind of, it's interesting. It's an interesting time, you know. We have to really, I felt like we learned something, you know, this past year. We can't control everything. You just have to kind of go as it, you know, as what happens, you know. So just taking one day at a time, you know, just I'd like the concert to resume. Of course, we all would love that, you know, because in the fall it was kind of nice, you know. I got back to performing, right. And I was traveling quite a bit, so I loved it, you know. I missed it a lot. I missed, you know, of course, being on stage, you know. Every musician misses that, you know. So I'm hoping that it will resume slowly, and then we'll take it from there. You know, we'll see what happens from there, and it's it's different, you know, to travel. You have to make a lot of, you know, preparations, a lot of plans. It's not easy anymore like it used to be. You can't just jump on a plane, you know. So internationally, it's going to take up more work for everybody to make this work. So just that is going to be, you know, quite challenging for a while. So, but yeah, I mean, I'd love to come back to do more, you know, performance as, you know, as we go through this year. We'll see what happens in 2022. Hopefully it will be a good one.
I hope it's good. It seems like it's kind of calming down. It seems like everybody's starting to crawl back out into the streets slowly. But again, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you so much, Brad. It was a pleasure. Thank you.
That does it for my time with Anna Vidovic. Isn't she wonderful? Isn't she lovely? Outstanding guitarist, I mean it. Real good guitarist, and proud to have her on the show. Make sure that you go to brettwilliamsmusic.com and give me a birthday present, even if it's 5 smackaroos. Just, you know, reach into your sack of coins and please give me a penny. I don't know what accent that was. Penny. Anyway, I'll see you guys next time. Thank you for joining me. Richard Sage at Savage Classical, rosettapodcast.com/insider, and brettwilliamsmusic.com/support to help out with the show. See you next time.